you, I can see that you have an uphill battle. I mean, totally all the way. And you need all the help you can get. And there are a lot of people up in Santa Barbara that know a hell of a lot. Why aren't they helping you? Isn't there anybody out there that would help you?
I don't know. They have a lot of information. I'm sure they don't want to be attacked. Maybe they want to take a middle-of-the-road position so that they can, you know, maintain the validity of the tech, do their thing, try to do away with the manipulations of the organization, and, you know, so the tech can survive in a valid environment, or validly survive in a good environment or something. But in any event, you know, I'm not in a position to criticize anyone, really. I mean, people have to do their own thing, and I'm doing my thing, and everyone's doing their own thing, and that's the way life goes. But it seems to me that when you find evidence of serious wrongdoing that you have been a part of or participated in or contributed money toward, and it's, you know, it's been fairly significant, and the more you check and the more significant you see it, and you realize the depth of the wrongdoing, then the concomitant degree of responsibility you should have to undo it. So, yeah, to my way of thinking, they should do something. And there's a couple people up there that have a lot of information.
Yeah. Can I say something on that? I talked to one of them just before, you know, what is today, Sunday. I talked to him Friday. I called him up, and I said, we're going to be seeing Mike Flynn, you know. I said, is he coming up to your place, too? Because it said they were having a mystery guest or something.
I haven't got the invitation.
She said, oh, no, we can't have him.
See, that's why I respect Valerie.
Wait a minute. So I started pulling out, why not? So they, too, are victimized, to some degree, are a victim of the black PR. Not totally. And I said, they think you're anti-Scientology. So I said, well, no, I've heard otherwise. I don't think he is. Oh, really? This is a whole new revelation. Yeah. So she wants me to call back. And this particular person is one of the people that lived with him, Ron, one of the ones that is in the Chevy station wagon in the middle of the night when he runs from place to place. She's there with him.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Okay, so she said she's very anxious for me to call tomorrow and tell her exactly what you said. If you were, the whole thing with her was he anti-Scientology to tech. I said, no, he's not. I bet I know, even without meeting him, but I'll verify it. And I think maybe, and I know John Nelson too, and I think that, you know, once they get this black PR dead agent, I think there'd be a good chance for you to go.
I think it is a very valid point there, and that is that you do not help in a second world. I mean, the only place, and I'm from New York, that I have found that Scientologists are willing to confront this man and what he's done is right here in California. That if you come to Europe, anywhere, and you say one word that would indicate that Paul Morton is totally 100% pure, you've had it.
Yeah.
So if you are in the business of disseminating, then you are actually cutting your own throat by saying anything that is anyway saying something about wrong.
Yeah, right. I had a, you know, conversation with Valerie about this, and you know, I understand the political realities of dealing with people who've had a lot of gains from the tech and who are working with the AAC or Valerie or whatever, and have a certain, in the gains you felt in the tech, and you have this deep inner kind of a sacred feeling toward Ron because, you know, you feel it, you feel his beneficence and he's helped you so much. I understand that, and I understand the political realities of saying things that carve into that degree of feeling somewhere deep inside you that may suggest that it's not all what's been told you. Believe me, I understand that. So I'm in a very difficult position to follow up. You know, if I say that the document says this, and you've got this feeling that inspirationally reacts against what I say, then, you know, I put myself in a bad light, and I'm sure that this is what David and the rest of the people up there feel, that, you know, there's too much potentially antagonistic PR to have someone like me come up and speak because I'm the big SP, and if I get up there and say those things, then maybe he's going to lose customers.
Yeah, but the thing
well,
is,
we are potentially his customers, and we are in a position to push this issue.
That's right.
And I, for one, am going to call up David Mayo and say, why on earth are you not supporting Michael Flynn and letting the truth come out? Because all we want is the truth now. And I think that if everyone in this room takes 5 minutes and calls up David Mayall, he'll realize that public opinion is changing.
And then maybe he'll do it. Then maybe he'll come out and just stand up, and then maybe the movement will go that much more toward unloading these overts.
If we've seen so many lies that have come on the historical line of who is Ron Hubbard, what do you know about lies that have been entered into the technical line? One of the examples is a great number of people have contributed to Scientology by inventing processes and sending them to Ron, and by just simply writing up their observations down through the years and sending them to Ron. So when we start talking about, well, the tech and so forth, well, the tech may not be wholly a product of L. Ron Hubbard, but rather that Ron Hubbard was a coordinator of a tremendous quantity of valid data.
Yeah.
Do you have any...
All right. I don't know very much about Scientology tech because I've never pursued it. I've never paid for it and done it. I've read a lot, but I've never done it in the way that you've done it. The subjective approach that you people have had with the tech, I've had some type of an objective analysis. To give you an objective analysis, my objective analysis is that based on conversations with Jerry and my own observations and my own readings, he plagiarized. He collected. He put a lot of science fiction in it. Now we're getting into an area now where, you know, I'm giving you Michael Flynn's analysis of something that is much more real to you people, so you'll have to take this all with a grain of salt, and you know, you take this however you want. I'm just giving you mine because you have had all different types of wins and experiences. But mine is simply that the few basic things that he took from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras and from the Bhagavad Gita have validity, and the simple basis of auditing has validity. All the mysticism that he injected into it to make money has no validity and is a serious disservice to you people. That's my viewpoint. Now, you may have an entirely different viewpoint. You may feel that, and we're not going to talk about OT3, but when you experience OT3 and have certain reactions, aside from the objective data that one would read without the training that would go into the processes so that you really know what's happening in OT3, so that an outside observer reading the materials might say, well, you know, that's a bunch of nonsense, right? And you people might say, well, subjectively, here's what I experience, and I know that that material means something much different to me in the way it was taught and delivered than some outside observer. And the reason they're doing that is because to even deliver that tech, it's got to be preserved in that mode of delivery. Well, see, as this gentleman said, I say nonsense.
No, don't knock it.
But yeah, I say nonsense to that. Yeah. But
you haven't tried it.
But I haven't tried that training process. I might have tried some that you don't know about in my own way, but I and may have my own view toward what, you know, real ultimate confront of reality is and the wall of fire really is and all that. I may have my own understanding of from a different scriptural perspective, if you want. But this man's right. Yeah, he's got it. See, that's me. That's my perspective. He's got it. You can see the semantics. You can see he's playing with mind. But your approach may be different. You may feel differently.
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
One, I wanted to ask you, are you not able to subpoena any of those people from AAC?
Well, you're dealing with, you know, sensitivities, political sensitivities, and... we could subpoena them. We may subpoena them. We assume that if we do, they'll tell the truth. Someone like Dee Dee or John Nelson have a lot of truth to tell, from what I understand. And but I'd be in the position of a lawyer, subpoenaing them blind into a case, putting them on a witness stand, asking them a question, having no idea what they're going to say. But I'm going to probably take that chance, because the way we're going to try this case, as much as the judge is going to let us, and we're just going to go for it. We're just going to we're not going to be cautious. Well, I'm not going to carve my questions to try to elicit, narrow answers to fit into little context of evidence to try to distort and weave and get a particular place. And we're just going to flat lay it out. And whatever comes out of these witnesses' mouths is what's going to come out, and that's the way it's going to be, and the judge is going to make rulings accordingly. And whatever the washout is going to be the washout. That's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah, my other question is a little different slant. This afternoon, Larry West mentioned that he was doing interrogatories on some of the members of the RTC.
Right.
And some of his questions were mentioned, and I said, somebody asked, did they think they would be telling the truth? He said they're under oath and something of perjury, and he felt, therefore, that they would answer the questions. And I know you're not going to say yes or no, or maybe not even given an opinion. Maybe you may raise an eyebrow or smile, but it seems to me highly likely that they would tell lies under oath or perjury or nothing.
Oh, they've been saying 5 years of lies.
I mean,
L. Ron Hubbard's lawyer.
That Larry would know. I thought, we can let him know, yes, we put this question to Michael Flynn, and Michael Flynn indicated so-and-so because I don't want
to. Oh, of course he's going to get lies.
Yeah.
Oh, of course not. Oh, they've been. They lie upon lie upon lie. I could, I'd have to drag in all my legal pleadings and all my interrogatories and read all the answers. And if I started doing that, it's that clicking in your head based on just what you know. Oh, yeah, that's not true. It's not true that L. Ron Hubbard had no involvement in the church in 1978. It's simply not true. How could they say that under oath, fined under the pains and penalties of perjury? How could they say that no one has seen or had any communication with L. Ron Hubbard since March 1980, when there are notarizations by David Miscavige all over the place? But how could they write that under oath and make those statements? Just outright lies. They do it.
Why there may be somebody here that could be a potential witness?
Could be.
Wanna?
Sure. Anyone got any data? Yeah, go ahead.
It turned out when Larry West presented his information in Pasadena, and I don't know whether you have this document yet or not, he had obtained the incorporation of the Church of Spiritual Technology.
Yeah.
He had a single signer, and that signer was Sherman Linsky. Can you tell us who that person is?
Yeah. Sherman Linsky is Ron's lawyer. Linsky links Linsky Magazine and Hella. Laurel knows them. Laurel worked with them. And he's been Ron's lawyer since sometime in 1981. And he has been directing all the litigation throughout the country, coordinating all of it. He's been paid a fortune in legal fees. He communicates regularly with Miscavige through broker to Ron. All the direction in the litigation goes via that comm line. And he he's been manipulating. That's the man who's been manipulating everything since at least late 1981.
Is that the Lichtenstein bank account?
Really? No. I mean, he's a lawyer. This Sherman Linsky is the name. He is the one who is really making the decisions behind Ron and in front of Ron. And everything that's going on is going through that law firm.
It's located in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The Valley,
yeah.
Or down?
He's out in Woodland Hills, out in the Valley.
You mean the judicial strategy or more than that?
Oh, much more. All the financial strategies, all the internal revenue strategy, all the legal proceedings and the direction and what they're doing there is all being controlled through Sherman Linsky's office.
How did this come about?
It came about because as the pressures intensified in the judicial arena, from the criminal cases, the civil cases, the IRS proceeding, there became a centralized group of people when Ron fled who controlled everything on his behalf. And, you know, you all know who. That's the brokers and Miscavige and Starkey and that group. And they controlled the organization for Ron, and everything had began getting cast in a judicial environment because there were loads of people complaining. There were loads of people who felt they got ripped off. There was the government. There was the IRS. There was the FBI. There was Toronto. There was France. There was England. There were loads of former Scientologists. There were parents. There were George Meisters. There were people everywhere complaining. So as the judicial pressure intensified, Ron fled, developed this young group that has taken over the church, and that young group coordinates with a legal group in making every decision they make, in doing everything they do. So there's been a completely incestuous relationship has arisen between the lawyers, who are getting paid millions of dollars in lawyers' fees, and the group running the church, who are just trying to perpetuate their control over the money. I mean, that the ultimate reality is that Miscavige and the others are just trying to control the funds. They're trying to control the money. They're surrounding themselves with a battery of lawyers to control these funds. It's that simple. That's what's happening.
Do you think there's any possibility that the church has been infiltrated by outside agents such as the CIA or anything that would be interested in destroying the church? Or the mafia.
Yeah. I'll say one thing. I the answer to your question, I don't know, but in general, the little I know and the little I read, wherever there's big money, there are parasites. And parasites take a lot of different forms. Maybe they can take the mafia form. Maybe they can take a lot of different forms. There are parasites where there's big money, particularly money that's been... If you've got a legitimate organization, right, and the funds are directed by legitimate people making responsible decisions, and everything's accounted for, and there are CPA statements, and everyone knows, everything's out front, everyone knows what's going on, then your susceptibility to being infiltrated by criminals is lessened because there's a lot of integrity. There's an environment of integrity, an environment of reality and truth. And, you know, you got to be a con to be con, something like that. But when you're secreting millions of dollars of nonprofit funds and Liechtenstein bank accounts and you're doing all the things that the RTC is doing, which I don't have to tell you about, then your susceptibility to parasites, whether they're in the form of lawyers who are getting millions of dollars of fees to say whatever you want them to say to preserve a position that's just a mythical position, or, you know, someone of more serious character coming in like the mafia and trying to get control of it. It happens every day in our society. Do I have any personal knowledge of someone trying to, you know, the mafia trying to infiltrate? No. But I do know, I mean, I've defended, you know, people for 15 years, and I know that where there are big depositories of money like that, then you see a lot of parasitic behavior. And I would suggest to you that the biggest parasitic behavior that's become obvious to everyone is the way the RTC and David Miscavige are operating. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, if they were trying to dispense the tech and help people, this environment wouldn't be like this. Michael Flynn wouldn't even be here.
No, and they would spend all those millions of dollars on setting up organizations all over the country. If they believed the Scientology work, that's where they would put that money, and all those thousands of staff members who are doing nothing would all be out there manning those churches.
You got it. And let me dispel another myth. Right. Let me dispel another myth. And someone can pass this on to whoever needs to get passed on. Here's Flynn the money grubber, representing all these people who are trying to get millions of dollars and destroy this church. Right? Stands to gain millions of dollars by representing these people and getting big judgments. Well, in 5 years, We're all litigating, and there's an army of lawyers against me. But in any event, then I'm defending people like Jerry. I mean, a lot of my lawsuits are defense cases. But the people don't even have money. Why am I doing it? I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I'm crazy. But in any event, here's what I got to say. Someone can pass this on. I said it. It's on the record. Here's what someone can pass on to Ron or the church. If Ron comes forward and says what's true, gets on a witness stand, comes down to the blue building, addresses you people, stands up, gets questions fired at him. Whoever wants to ask him, whoever wants to walk in the door, fires the questions. He feels them, answers them, tells the truth. If he does that, I'm out some $400,000 at this point. If he does that, I will recommend to every one of my clients to drop their lawsuits and we'll all go home. Because if he does it, knowing what I know about him from these documents, I would say if he could now confront this wall of fire, then you'd have on your hands a very big being. You'd have on your hands a very, very big being. If he can come out and confront what's happening and say, okay, here it is, guys, for better or worse. And I'll throw something further out. He can even lie if he wants to. All he's going to do is do it. So if someone says, well, Ron, did you go to George Washington? Yes. Did you graduate? Yes. Even if he lies, as long as he comes out and confronts, I'll drop every lawsuit or recommend to my clients, because it's my clients who have to do it. I'll recommend to every client to drop every lawsuit, and we'll all go home.
Where do we contact you?
So the question is, where do we contact Ron? Yeah, in Boston. My office is under my name in Boston. Out here, you can contact me through Contos and Bunch, law firm in Woodland Hills. Julia Dragojevich is her name.
You never know, Michael. On his deathbed, that he might ask for a sex check to be published widely.
He might. That might. And then I'll have to figure out whether that conforms to my criteria here. He's got to come out and look in your eyes. You've got to look in your eyes. You've got to ask him questions and you've got to answer.
Why is it okay if he lies?
Because I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he thinks he can perpetuate what I, you know, what I say is a lot of years of lies. Some 72. If he thinks he can perpetuate that, then good luck to him. Good luck to him. And if he pulls it off, he deserves it. But I don't know how you can pull it off.
Why haven't, or maybe they have, but why haven't the people who have perjured themselves, the RTC people who you say they are liars and they have lied a considerable amount, I know that's true, but why haven't they been prosecuted for perjury?
Well, the GO was prosecuted for perjury. Yeah, in the criminal cases, the 11 people were convicted, several of them were convicted of perjury. But to answer your question, in all the civil cases, because you got to know how the judicial system works. If you got a lot of money, you know, the purpose of the law is to harass and discourage rather than to win, enough harassment on someone, you know. If you got a lot of money, level zero check sheet, page, if you got a lot of money and can hire a battery of lawyers, you'd be amazed what you can do. Now, you think, as legitimate people in terms of right, wrong, truth, falsity. You get in a courtroom, boom, you're going to find truth, you're going to find falsity. You get in a legal proceeding, that's where it's supposed to come out, just like in an auditing session. You're supposed to find it out, it's supposed to become black and white, and everyone goes home and it's an adversary system. You got to fight and scrape like a lion to try to get everything to come out in front of a finder of fact. Finder of fact hears both sides. And most of the time, in an actual trial, in a jury trial, in front of 12 people like yourself who read eyes and read demeanor and read truth and know when they're getting fed a line and they know when the person is saying something that's true, then most of the time you get a true result. But everything leading up to putting it in front of a jury, which is the foundation of our system and the preservation of our system, everything leading up to putting it in front of 12 people who can do all this discernment is manipulation. It's the lawyers fighting for position, filing mountains of pleadings to get a favorable judge. Do this, do that, bob and weave and distort. Everything is that. That's why it took all the time to put Mary Sue in jail. Because if you've got enough money, you can create a mountain of paperwork that'll just undermine the entire judicial system. So, in this litigation, there are lies all over the record. For me to start spending my time just trying to uncover each and every lie and to try to get that sorted out, it's just an impossibility. I mean, you're dealing with it's just impossible. I'm just going for the big ones.
Do you have any data about Mary Sue, like what's happened to her, how is she doing?
Mm-hmm. I've heard conflicting stories. I've heard just recently that she's in a halfway house in L.A., meaning that, you know, it's a vehicle for coming out of prison, and before you're fully released, you go to a place where you have to live there, but you can work and that type of thing. That's story one, and she's very ill, and she feels deserted by husband and friends. And I feel very sorry, by the way, for Mary Sue Hubbard. I feel that she was one of the original victims. I feel that, you know, even if she ran Snow White, even if she did run Snow White as the controller, which Jimmy Dinkowski could tell you, it was all planned in 1973 in an apartment in Manhattan by Ron. But even if she did do it, and she did it out of, you know, a protective mechanism in her to help her husband, and she found some rational justification to do it to preserve the tech or whatever, assuming you could ascribe to her some ideal or some proper motive for doing it, which, you know, maybe you can, I don't know. And assuming that she got convicted of it, which she did, you know, if you're the lady's husband and your wife is going to prison, and, you know, she's worked for you for 30 years and she's had 4 of your children, you know, basic humanity, you with her, you help her, you hold her hand. And that, to me, says a lot. So I feel very bad for her. I feel that she took the rap. I know who did it. She took the rap. Whether, you know, you can rack, it's all the accumulated lies. Okay, you gotta let her take the rap, and Ron doesn't have to come forward, because he comes forward, then the tech will be undermined, and the church won't be preserved, and all the heathens like Flynn will, you know, will run amok. Well, you know, no. Lies beget lies, truth begets truth, and the accumulations beget accumulations, and you either end up with reality, or you end up with a bunch of horse manure.
What was the other story for Mary Sue?
Oh, that she's back in charge of back in charge of All Clear. And that was, I heard some time ago, and I'm not sure that's true.
What's All Clear?
Clear Ron of all the judicial proceedings.
That may have come from a speculation that would be what she would do. There was a speculation she would do it, and
right.
It turned into a fact on
the rumor line. Yeah. I really don't know. I would probably at this point tend to believe, because of my most recent source, the first story I gave her.
If she was in charge of All Clear, the first thing she'd do would be to shoot David Miscavige.
Well, now you get on.
The rumor, yeah.
Because the way he
but
on her.
Yeah, but it's a myth that, in my judgment, it's a myth that David was her undoing, and Ron didn't know about it, and it was really David who did all this. I mean, Bill Franks is now one of my clients, and Bill Franks was made ED, the first ED since 1966. The last one was Ron. And, theoretically, an ED is a position for life. The only reason he was made ED is to axe Mary Sue, because it put him higher than Mary Sue. He axed her, and then they got rid of him, and they put the 22-year-old in control.
Who made him ED? He has quite a history with wives. You know, she's in the
first. That's an understatement.
Well, one to what you said about the halfway house, what I heard was she's living in a penthouse on Wilshire.
Maybe that's her. Maybe when you got all that, maybe when you got that kind of money, that's your halfway house.
And two, what you said about, well, this is different data. Now I have contrary data, but the one datum I had before was LRH sued, and this is supposedly a court case that's in D.C. someplace, be sued Kissinger for $800 million for personal damages. Now, this is the story I was given.
Yeah.
The Savage was supposed to trade that for Mary Sue's freedom.
Yeah, that.
And he traded it for an IRS court case.